application ya gago re lamogela. We are happy to have Eskom with us, because through Eskom we are able to see to do all the many things that we now take for granted, thanks to Eskom. We have tea, our mics are working, our lifts are working, almost everything, thanks to Eskom. So, because of its centrality, we want Eskom right all the time. If we see any sense of straying off the rails, we get worried. Because if Eskom can get into the bush or into a ditch, all of us back to Stone Age, you know. So we must keep that vigilant eye on Eskom. Well, as you know, we should have had this meeting some time ago. But when you were having some industrial challenges, we understood and sought to give you the space to deal with those issues, which I'm not sure, but I hope you have managed to deal with them for now. For now. But no, it's fine. So that's why we're meeting here. But and the reason we delayed a bit, some of our comrades are supposedly stuck in traffic, and one of them is supposed to be our lead person in one of the focus areas. But it's not a crisis, because our comrade Yeshengwa is around. He's supposed to deal with the other part, so we can start with the other part. I'm sure they'll get us along the way. But if it pleases Eskom, we'll just take a 2 minutes break and just have some tea. We didn't want to get into heavy discussions on empty stomachs, so we'd have 2 minutes to have some tea, and then we can get into the discussion, which Mr. Hatem himself, we should go through them in less than no time, finish up, and go and do some other serious businesses in our offices. So we don't intend to sit here the whole morning until lunchtime. So can we have just that 2 minutes break? Let's get something to drink, and then we can continue.
Thank you.
May I request once again that let's switch off our cellular phones. May we ensure that our cellular phones are off so that we can engage without any disturbance. All right, Ntombi, akuyomele unokukhuluma ngaphandle ngoba nisakwazi ukuhleba. That's what afflicts people. The older they get, they can't whisper anymore. Yeah, Puman, you khuluma ngaphandle. Well, you must appreciate the ANC is over 100 years old. So, true. No, I think Mama will approach this engagement in three parts. We have deviations and expansions, but there was also a specific case that we had said needed to be looked at about a complaint from some company about a manipulated tender. I see that you, the CEO, has sent us a three-page response. So I would like that maybe you could talk to that first and just clear it off, and then we can get into the other matters thereafter. I don't know if we can start. I'm just thinking we're not meeting for the first time this year, so there's been no reshuffle from our side. It's still the same cabinet. You know the faces here. Mr. Ben, this is the one I'm talking about. Do we all not have it? All right. Yeah. I'll give you mine. Yeah. Can we talk to it first?
Thank you, Chair. May I simply just make a quick introductory remarks on the presentation, please.
No, I want us to talk to...
To the tender first, okay.
To that tender issue.
Okay, thank
I want
you.
Us to be a bit focused.
Okay, thank
yeah.
you.
I'm totally lost, Chair, which tender, which one are you talking about? I will appreciate a copy.
You signed it off on the 18th. Is it a fake presentation?
No, very much fake. It's a. It was signed on my behalf. I was away. Yeah.
Sorry, Chair.
Yeah.
Can the CEO just repeat that? I'm very, very worried at that statement because his signature appears on this letter.
Through you, Chair, I'm saying I had an acting CEO because I was away who signed on my behalf.
Chairman, if I may, at the time I was standing in for the chief, and I've signed it off. So the feedback will be given by the acting chief procurement officer.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning to the honourable members. My name is Khomotso Skiepros. I'm the acting chief procurement officer. This specific complaint was received by Eskom. And in terms of the level at which it was raised, it was investigated by our assurance and forensic department to give independence from the procurement department where the complaint was being related to. I'll run briefly through the nature of the complaint. Firstly, there was an allegation and in the complaint that the forensic department itself did not provide feedback. And in the content, we illustrate that there was, in fact, communication and correspondence between the forensic department as well as the complainant. And there was a question also around the project manager failed to address the concerns raised in the letter of objection that the complainant raised around April of this year, and also whether the concerns have been adequately addressed. So with regard to those three areas of complaint, it is not correct that ESCOM's Forensic and Assurance Department did not give feedback. The actual complaint was lodged. There was a reference number provided when the case was lodged, and there was correspondence between ESCOM Forensic Department as well as the complainant. Secondly, the complainant also indicates that the project manager did not address their concerns. And what we have established is that, in fact, the complainant did not discuss the issue with the project manager, but with the procurement manager. So there is a degree of confusion in terms of how the complainant views the issue. It is also not true that the concerns were not addressed by the procurement manager because when the objection was raised, again, there was engagement between the procurement manager and the complainant. And this was around the 23rd of April when the procurement manager responded and then the complainant raised the matter to the forensic department on the 30th of May. So, Chair, that is the high-level feedback, but I can run through the rest of the detail if the committee so desires.
All right. No, I think what we needed to get was the sense that the matter has been looked into and that you found out.
Indeed, there is just in the closing part a statement that although the complainant is not very specific and precise around the issue, the forensic department is digging into this further because we're trying to establish to say what is really at the root cause of the complaint being raised in the organization, ultimately reaching the level of this committee for redress. Thank you, Chairman.
Fine. So when your forensic unit is done and has a report, we'll be happy to see it so that we too can have a sense of the finality of the matter. Okay. All right. Can we...
But, Chair, can we get a sense more or less when? Because I'm worried about these investigations
ongoing investigations that are not concluded. Maybe if we can tie this to a timeline, that by this time, hopefully, will be done. You might not be accurate, but at least let's have an idea as to when are we finalizing this issue.
Thank you, Chairman. I think considering that, in my estimation, it is not a very complex issue, I think we should be able to provide the response before the end of September. Because September starts next week, so I think if we give ourselves 4 to 5 weeks, we should be able to conclude and revert to the committee. Thank you, Chairman.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Where I want to start, which is not what I initially raised my hand for, is the end of September. This tender was concluded already. All that you have to get is the details of what happened, why it happened, and how is it going to be resolved. So end of this, why should it take 4 weeks, 4 to 5 weeks for you to come and conclude on that? You know, we're spending a lot of money on forensics and investigations that we know we're not taking serious. You know, the reason why I raised my hand, Chairperson, is because there's an allegation. I'm not sure if it's an allegation anymore. And that's what everybody is saying. We meet communities every day. And they will tell you that for you to get anything in government, anyway, in all the provinces, 9 provinces, even here in Western Cape, you need to have somebody that you know there, even a cleaner, somebody applying for a job for a cleaner. They need to have somebody working in there. So if you don't have anyone that you know, you're not going to get what you want. And it's a wrong, if we're working on that, it's wrong, and that's why we have to get into the bottom. No. What I wanted to ask, Chairperson, this is not the only tender. There are people who say, I've tendered for Eskom forever, and every time I try to investigate, I don't get anything. You're taking this to the same people that didn't give that particular person the tender. Obviously, they are going to give you what you want. I'm not sure if there are any means in your company to deal with that, because we're dealing with expansions and deviations where you're giving the same companies year in, year after. You know the history of Eskom and what has happened before in Eskom. So for us to make sure that we stop with that, if you're saying you are really serious with dealing with corruption and what has happened in Eskom and you want to turn Eskom around, I think that has to change as well. But if you're taking the same complaints to the same people who made it not to happen, it doesn't make sense to me. Is there any other body within Eskom that can deal with that?
Why, you know, the reason I wanted to stop you, I was thinking, why don't we, because the question is of a more general nature. Why don't we deal with the specifics that we have? Then at the end, you could bring that as a general question, and then maybe we could then talk to it.
I'm asking Chairperson, you are complaining, and you are the adjudicator. We're not as tender body. You are adjudicating this tender, and I didn't get it because I've heard from somebody, because people talk anyway. Whether you stop them or not, they will talk and they will say, but you are the one that, I'm not saying that's the case. You are the one that got this tender, but they didn't give you because they wanted somebody else. And you're taking it back to Mr. Godi for adjudicate, somebody has complained. You're taking it back to him to actually give whatever. And that's the person that you're investigating from. Obviously, he will say the very same thing that he said in the first tender. This is not the only tender, Chairperson, that I'm... people have come before us as members of SCOPA and complained. So I'm just saying that, is there anybody, a body, not anybody, meaning anyone, is there a body within ESCOM that deals with that, the one that is independent from the ones that are adjudicating the tenders?
All right.
Okay.
the ANF, which is Insurance and Risk, is independent of Risk. They have this internal audit team, and they are the people that are doing this. So what we'll try to do, as it has happened before, we will try to make sure that it gets priority. 4 weeks, because we're talking about 1,002 cases that are ongoing, might be a bit long because we have quite a number of them. But I will try to request a speedily response on that. So if they can come in 2 weeks' time, I'll be happy. But the latest is 4 weeks.
All right. Okay. Ross?
Chairperson, if I can just ask a question on process. It seems to me that the complaint was lodged with the procurement manager, and then the procurement manager later escalated the problem to the project manager. The project manager then later escalated it to the forensic team or forensic manager. Now, I just wanted to know, I find some resistance in terms of Eskom saying that it was only escalated to the procurement manager. But in terms of a contract, is it not stipulated the procedure? If there's any unhappiness what should the procedure be? Please escalate it to also, once I believe what would be practical, if you escalate it to the procurement manager and bring in some checks and balances to say, once you escalate the problem to the procurement manager, you should also escalate it to the project manager. And the project manager then should also escalate it immediately to the investigative agency. I'm just trying, the point that I'm trying to make it, I'm just checking whether your checks and balances in terms of centralization of power to the procurement manager should not stop there, where there's a full authority for the procurement manager to say this is what I'm doing, but in terms of consultation and transparency to say this is the procedure, that there's a notification to all structures to say we have a problem, let's see what happens here, and perhaps we can avert the whole legal issues.
The process has been easier because it still goes through the forensic team. Anything that's been raised, whether it's whistleblowing or the document that is coming from Parliament, will go to the forensic team. The forensic team, what they do is immediately do a very high-level assessment to see if there's a story here. Then if there's a story, they follow it through. Then it gets reported to me and EXCO that these are the number of cases we are looking, we've added these ones. Then those cases go further to the board through the Audit and Risk Committee. These are the investigation we are looking, and we are targeting to have it finished by this date. The team in the forensic is independent on procurement, and it doesn't cooperate with the procurement, because if it does so, then we'll have problems. The biggest problems that we've had in the past was the collapse of this forensic and the ability of procurement to take certain decisions that they shouldn't have taken. So we've avoided that.
All right. Okay. Now that's fine. We'll await feedback and we'll take it up from there.
We will try to come as soon as possible.
Okay. Lengua?
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning. I'm going to be somewhat very brief. I just want to focus, Chair, on deviations. There's a deviation for Edcom, Babcock, and Steinmüller, which was rejected by Treasury. And so I want to find out that being the case, because the reason cited was...
What number is that?
No, Chair. I'm preparing my numbers.
Oh, okay.
But I'm sure by Ayaz, Chair. Because that's it's just a principal question, really. It's not really going into the merits and demerits.
All right.
So because I want to establish a principle, that it was a sole supplier. So on the basis of the retraction by Treasury, what did you do then? Because in the main, the issue is sole supplier, and I want to check the extent to which the market has tested to back up the claim of sole supplier. So I'm just going to use that as an example. So here comes Treasury and says and rejects that application. So what happened then?
Switch on the mic.
Yeah. With due respect to the committee and an appreciation of the job they're doing, we were under impression, like usual, that you give us, even if it's 15 minutes or so, of starting, just highlighting the presentation, the variations, what causes variations, and talk about the other areas where we miss the target as a start. But we'll also indicate in that process the flow that should be undertaken so that in questions of this sort, we will then be able to say, in this case, this is a process, that is what happened, and this is how it did end up here. May I humbly request that you give us the space that won't be long, just to provide a snapshot, a very high-level operation through our current chair today, which will then go to Mr. Skelbassier. Then we can then begin to talk about each transaction there, because they'll be appearing. We are talking a number of transactions here.
Now, Chair, I am aware that the request is directed to you. But let me just indicate one thing, that unfortunately we are not operating that way. You have forwarded, that is to ask your presentation, and we have read your presentation, and what we'll be doing, we did research, our own research. And what we'll be doing, we will be asking you, that is questions of clarity, that is on all these issues. Because we have also checked with National Treasury. National Treasury has also given us information. And for us to listen to your presentation, the one that we have, unfortunately, is going to waste our time. Normally, the way we operate is we would request the department to send in information. And we go through your information. And based on that, we then consult other departments that is in in government for them to confirm that is the information that you have given us. Now, our view is very simple. Is let's zoom into the issues because we have done research on all these issues.
Yeah.
I just, you see, yesterday we received, well, in last week, we received a report, Sonia, 1.2. And now somehow, somewhere, then you get this 1.3 today. And I'll tell you what my concern is. This kind of blindsiding is what for me is a problem. Similarly to what happened yesterday. Department of Public Works at short notice, at the snap of a finger, something else. Has anybody considered the fact that some of us maybe inside of the house actually go and try and prepare? So to receive this now changes the whole scope, and I rather look like one of those really people who tear an envelope at the start of a meeting you call it that time. It I don't think it's fair. Because then I'm going to ask which presentation is going to be presented.
this last minute one. Because if that's the case, then you might as well not bother, because I'm not going to sit here and subject myself to try to do a thorough investigation on a newness which presents itself now.
Yeah, no, I think let's continue, because I think Comrade Kekane correctly summarizes. The other time when we allowed you to make a presentation, that's a completely different context. And I must say that we find it unacceptable that you would give us updated information this morning. It's wrong. It's unacceptable. We'll not want that. Because we spent the whole night yesterday preparing on the basis of the documents we had. That's what I did. And that's what I actually got to do yesterday when we were in the house. Go and prepare. Now, if you must throw that away and must, it becomes a... It becomes wrong. It becomes wrong. And I hope next time we meet, just get all your information, all your facts in time and send them. Because those are the ones we're going to be dealing with. Anything new that we have not seen, it will be a bit difficult.
No.
But that's fine. Let us continue. If there's anything additional, you'll always explain. And when we're done, and there are areas and issues that you feel need to be contextualized, we'll definitely give you the opportunity to do that. So. We'll cover all the angles at the end. Yeah. Saying what?
That was the question I'm asking. In the case of National Treasury not acceding to a request for a deviation, particularly one where the reason cited is that it was the sole supplier, what happens then? Because I want us to zoom into the area of a thorough test of the market. So that was the question, Chairperson. Because there were 15 deviations that were applied for of the 59 applications, 15 were deviations. And there was number of rejections.
Chairman, thank you very much. So if I can try to answer in two parts, the specific question that was raised about Babcock and company, the three suppliers where we had applied to National Treasury for an expansion of a number of contracts that deal with the maintenance and repairs of high-pressure pipe work.
Are we talking expansion or deviation?
It appears, you see, that particular one is on the fence.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in whatever way it's responded to, I'm fine. The principal question is,
yeah,
on the basis of a rejection where it was a sole supplier, what happens post the rejection?
Indeed, Chair. So if I may, so in this case, it's classified as not approved. But in fact, in the approval, what we may have asked for, just to illustrate, you could have said we'd like to continue and increase the scope with this service provider for another 3 years for various reasons. And Treasury said, no, we will allow you 12 months because you have to go into the market. So that is how it is classified in this specific case, that they gave us not what we asked for, they gave us less time and said go into the market, and that process has happened. Now, on the general principle, if Treasury had said no, we have to stop. Now, in this report, we are reflecting that there are three instances where Treasury had said stop, and we did not stop. And that's a discovery that we've made that is completely unexpected, because the operating model is if Treasury has said stop, you need to stop. And in this case, Chair, and as you would have seen in the original submission, so maybe I need to step back and say, firstly, to apologize for changing the presentation. I think we accept that it is wrong, and we apologize for that. With regard to the three cases where we proceeded and
right.
What...
No, that's fine. So in law, if National Treasury says stop, you stop. And there are instances where you stopped when they said stop, and there are instances where you did not stop. I think that's the principal response. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I was actually going there. So three instances where you didn't stop. Which were those three instances and why? And what was the consequence for that transgression? So can we zoom into those three particular aspects in great detail as to it was for who, for what, the value, and why you didn't stop? And I'm still not answered, Chair, on what happens to the aspect wherein you said there was, this was the sole supplier, and you find Treasury saying stop. What happens? I'm interested to know, because sole supplier is a ruse, it's a convenient ruse. But can we just zoom into those three, Chair?
Okay. Maybe let's go back to that first question. It was applied as sole supplier, and National Treasury said no. What happened? What happened after stopping? Do you just freeze? Or you stop, and then what?
It's a very difficult question. So let me try.
No, it's a very practical one.
Understood.
Then it can't be difficult. What he's asking is in the instances where you had applied for permission on the basis of sole supplier and National Treasury had said no, what happened in those instances? One, you stopped. And then what?
Then, Chair, you need to go into the market.
Good.
Okay. Now, I think where the difficulty lies, and that's why I said it's a difficult question, is in the terminology, the sole supply and the single source. So in the case of those three on the boiler maintenance, it was single source where we're saying this firm is on site, they are doing the work, we believe we need to continue with them while we test in the market. And what the difference was to say we are not approving 3 years, we are giving a shorter time, accelerate getting into the market. Thank you, Chair.
Now, I would imagine that surely National Treasury imagines it to be practical or deems it to be practical that the process can be completed in a year. I'm interested then to know why would Eskom find anything, would want that to be done in 3 years? I'll tell you why I ask. I'll make a typical example. SAA last week tells us that to do an entire inventory register will take them 3 years. The staff there go in 5 years. 5 years. So for them to account for everything that is at SA Technica, from the screw to the engine parts, that they can only complete that in 5 years. The workers, out of their own initiative, managed to do it in 2 months. So that's why, where I'm headed, Chair, is deviations and expansions have become a norm as opposed to an exception. And I think that general terminology is now everywhere. So I'm interested to know, why is it that Eskom would find it to take longer, unless Treasury is crazy, because you are applying for an exception. 3 years seems on the side of permanent, bordering on evergreen. So how is it that your projections, your planning and your estimations
are far more relaxed and not within the ambits of urgency. I'm trying to look at the planning process, because I'm going to come to the next thing, which says, at what point do you begin making these applications? On expiry, or just before expiry or post-expiry?
Chair, if I could come in here. The deviation, or what causes the deviation, tends to differ from transaction to transaction.
Well, let's use the case that he was using as a case.
Yeah, I wanted to make an example because I don't know it, then you can add on. But it does indicate, because it was a broad question asking a specific question, that I can provide that broadness then upon which he's going to provide that answer on the issue.
Why don't we deal with that answer?
Okay.
Because the essence of his question is, Eskom wanted a period of 3 years. And National Treasury said, no, we think you can do it in 12 months. And then you do it in 12 months. At what point at what point do we look at contracts and say this one needs to go out on tender, this one needs to we need a deviation to continue with it or whatever? I think that's the question.
Thank you, Chair. In principle, we're supposed to be proactive in how we deal with these expiries. And I think you will note in the report that we submitted that we admit that this has been a weakness in our systems, that our planning has not been what it should be, and therefore very often the issues get escalated and raised even to the governance committees internally at a very late stage. Which, as we have indicated in the submission, the board has frowned upon very strongly to say this is completely unacceptable because you are not giving any decision maker real choices. By coming too late, it is almost like you are holding a gun to the decision maker to say, if you don't allow this, we're going to have a problem. So we are trying to strengthen our governance and our planning processes. The board has made this request, and indeed we have already made the submission through the executive committee, and it is on its way to the board to say these are the changes that we need to effect in order to improve how we do it, to avoid getting into this situation where it leads to difficulties.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
All right.
Chairperson, in the main, these deviations would arise because of poor planning. So it speaks to the state of functionality of contract management. I mean, I was reading here very thorough analysis when you say that in the fourth quarter of 2017-18 you completed 9,159 new procurement transactions. That's very good. So you know exactly what it is that you're dealing with. The next phase is to track those. So to know when it will end and so on. So then the question then becomes, how functional is your contract management? Is it effective? Is it efficient? Because, you see, maybe let me put it this way, Chair. There's a particular reason why I've got a dislike for expansions and deviations. And in the main, it arises out of the fact that we engineer them so that they suit certain people to a certain end. They're never honest. So I want to then find out the state of which contract management is functional. Who's responsible for to say when we reach a particular point, we need to effect the process of renewal and so on within the ambits of the law, without using the request for deviation. Because as far as I'm concerned, the deviation expansion is an emergency. Because failing to plan is planning to fail.
So that's the point I was trying to answer, Chair. Deviations should be avoided by all means. And we are one of the big institutions on deviations. And the board of the member will have highlighted measures that have been taken to deal with this issue. But we have to separate the kinds of deviations.
Try and talk to the mic, always.
We should try to separate the different types of deviations that take place. Let me make an example. There's an unplanned event or surprise discovery.
You know, CEO, we understand all of that. I can assure you that. We're very clear. And when you hear, it is for you to demonstrate that indeed there was a need.
Yeah.
So that where there was no need, were able to agree there was no need.
Yeah.
It was because of mismanagement.
Mm.
And as he asked, what systems are in place to make sure these things don't happen? And those people who mismanage tenders or contracts in a way that then puts you in such an envious position, what are you doing to take corrective measures?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the conceptual framework we understand. That's why we've taken it upon ourselves to demand quarterly briefings from National Treasury, because we'd realized that instead of doing exactly what we're starting to explain, it is now being used to do other things. So conceptually, we're together. We understand. It is for you to demonstrate to us when you deal with a particular transaction that no, this was justified, or to accept that this was not justified. That's the exercise. So the conceptual part, no, we are with you. We understand it.
Can we come back to contract management or diligence at the end, and so far as deviations are concerned? So let's speak about the limestone handling at Kusile to the value of 75 million rands. So when National Treasury then...
Just wait so they can hear you.
The handling of limestone at Kusile to the value of 75 million rand. So Treasury declined that. Right. So what happened after that? I would imagine that's hashtag 49.
Number 49, somewhere towards the back on the detailed notes. In the Ross, in their presentation. Yes. Yeah.
So, Chairman, on that number 49, essentially the conclusion from National Treasury was to say, Eskom, go out into the market. We are finalizing the RFQ, and we are going out into the market as directed.
How did you arrive at wanting to request a deviation?
So, Chairman, if I may explain, because this case I do recall, essentially, as you know, we are busy constructing Medupi, and one of the materials required is limestone. As it stands, the limestone is delivered to Vereeniging. It is offloaded and it is trucked to Kusile. What we are seeking to do was to reduce the volume of material we transport on road, and we wanted to rail it. And so what we're seeking to do is that closer to Kusile, there are rail sidings that are owned and operated by Transnet, and there are some of the suppliers that have rights to use those rail sidings. And therefore, the proposal was we wanted to approach those suppliers that have the rights and access to the rail sidings to say we would like to put a tender only to them so that we can get a lower cost by using the rail as opposed to road.
We've made a request that cellular phones will be closed.
My phone is off.
I get the technical nuances. So on your own determination, you said, no, these are the people. I'm not sure I even follow the logic of that. Was it an emergency? So it was just decided to look, we're going to deviate on this particular one.
So
to negotiate cheaper, because the reason you cite here is cheaper rail logistic solution. How did you determine it was cheaper if you had not tested any other player?
Chair, perhaps one of my colleagues may wish to add. So if I may just try to explain from a process point of view. What we normally do is at an early stage you conduct market research. You are looking for solutions. And you have options of road or rail, and generally for bulk material, rail is cheaper. So as you pursue that line, you say, so what are the rail options available to where I require delivery to be made?
But you see, research is not a tender process.
Fair enough, Chair, and I think that's why we're saying we had made this request for this single source approach, and Treasury says we disagree with you, go to the market, test the road and the rail and whatever, and then come to a determination. And that's what we are doing.
So what I'm trying to get at, Chairperson, that you engaged in a feel-good exercise, to put it nicely. So this research is done. Is it informed by any basis in law? Your consultations for this research, does it include Treasury, or you first go and consult whomever you consult and then take that to Treasury? How long does it take you to do this research? How much does it cost you to do it? Because I still want to still maintain, Chapter, that this is how the abuse of deviation arises. Who informed the decision to say, on this particular aspect, we want to go and research, as the chair correctly points out? This is a lot of money, 75 million rand, which is probably now escalated by the fact that there was wasteful expenditure of some bogus research. Because I think Treasury would not have rejected it if it was sound. So what informs this kind of intervention on your part? Utila, so Alice research, to whose benefit? I'm just trying to punch holes in the process of abuse. Of the process. So how did you arrive at at this particular determination? Even if we use this as a case study for everything else, how and why? Because, Chair, the next thing I'm going to be interested to know on the officials involved and their relationship with the people who are going to be at the receiving end of the 75 million rands.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman, I will request Mr. Ngobe, one of my colleagues, is in primary energy. So they deal with coal, limestone, and other primary energies, to just give a few comments, please. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. My name is Buisile Ngobe. I am at Eskom working in the primary energy space. We procure coal and limestone.
In this specific case, when we looked at the logistics of bringing limestone from the Northern Cape to Lusile, we actually first looked at rail. In fact, we had approached Transnet to get the limestone from the mine in the Northern Cape right through to Lusile. So we actually looked for an end-to-end solution from Transnet. Unfortunately, because the rail doesn't go right through to Lusile, their initial suggestion, which was also an interim solution, was for us to drop the limestone first in Vereeniging, which is what is happening at the moment. And we said to them, in the long run, we would want you to eventually take the limestone right through to Lusile. So when we looked at the road course from Vereeniging to Lusile, we continued to say to them, guys, we would want you to expedite us having the limestone delivered directly to Lusile. It was out of a Transnet study that they said to us, we have looked at further options to bring the limestone closer to Lusile by rail, and they suggested the Highveld complex. So in the Highveld complex, there are a number of operators there who operate various sidings. So the idea of going into the Highveld siding where there are a number of operators was actually initiated by Transnet to start with. And then we said to ourselves, this,
so I don't want to lose my track, but I'm sorry to interrupt you. Just on that particular point. So Transnet said to you, this is the solution. I get the whole notion of building state institution capacity and money cycling within state institutions, but the other consideration is following due process. So Transnet said that to you, and you took that as the alpha and omega of the gospel of this transaction. Because I would imagine that's the basis upon which then you opposed Treasury. Why couldn't Hlengwa and Hlengwa Incorporated also come and make a suggestion to you?
No, if you look at it, the study that Transnet did was to look at the entire sidings that could possibly be used for limestone. First, obviously, it's things like capacity and whether they're able to handle and all that. So Transnet did a study. Our belief in that Transnet obviously had done a good job is that they actually own most of the sidings around the area. They lease them out to people, but they own most of the sidings. So out of that, because the other thing that we looked at ourselves, if you look at the siding, the operational cost that we're actually looking at here is for you to handle the limestone at the siding. So if the siding is much further away from Lusile, you have to still transport right across back to Lusile. So the case that we actually built was around obviously reducing the cost like we had obviously asked Transnet to do. That's why we then approached Treasury.
So this was not your study?
Well, it was by and large a Transnet study, together with information obviously that we have as well.
Did you commission the study, put it that way?
Well, we commissioned it in the sense that we asked Transnet to provide us with an end-to-end solution that is cheapest to Lusile, to deliver the limestone.
Right, let's narrow it down to the sidings. That particular information, that evaluation and assessment, was a Transnet exercise, not an ESCOM exercise.
Yeah.
So it was not your information. You received it from Transnet.
By and large, yes.
No, by and large is vague, sir.
No, but remember, we also have information in our own stable because we already have we transport coal by rail, and we actually have contracted sidings.
Did you
as
make
well.
The submission to Treasury on the basis of your own work on what Transnet gave you?
Yes.
So what Transnet gave you?
Transnet gave us, and we obviously do our own analysis as well.
So on the basis of what Transnet gave you?
Yes.
All right. Don't know why that was. Right. So, didn't anybody see something fundamentally wrong with that? To trust the integrity of that process? Would, like I say, I use this term with due respect, use it as an alpha and omega.
Transnet sekhulumile. And then, to the exclusion of every other person. All right. So, quite frankly, I put it to you, the process was flawed. And I think Treasury had a, had every reason to do that. So, then Transnet now has, I mean, the Treasury has rejected your submission. So, you are now in the process of being in the market. What happens in the interim? Who's now handling? Or maybe let me stop that here. Was there an existing contract before? Was this all new?
There is a contract that exists. Like I said, we actually have an interim solution where we are dropping the, we are delivering the
What's
limestone.
What's the lifespan of that interim?
It's supposed to be 24 months. The interim solution, while we were seeking a solution with Transnet, we gave it a lifespan of about 24 months.
Who was handling that interim solution? And how were they appointed?
On the basis of a tender.
So you went on tender?
We went on tender, yes. We went on tender for the supply and delivery of limestone.
Right.
And so at the moment, it's actually being supplied and delivered by the supplier.
So right. you had experience of tendering for this particular operation?
No, not the siding operation. Remember, here we're talking only the siding operation.
That's where we are, sir. We are at siding now. I'm asking what Treasury has said, that particular aspect needs to go on. Who's handling that at this point in time on the basis of what contract? Is it an existing contract? Was it an intervention that had to be made on the basis of what Treasury had to say? That particular, that niche of the chain of the transportation.
This new one is actually a new sort of service that we are requiring. Like I said, initially we went out and bought limestone on the basis of delivery. The supplier is actually taking it right through to Kusile. So the supplier that we bought from initial stage, we said we want limestone delivered to Kusile.
Right.
So they've got a contract with...
to change then?
What is this?
What necessitated the change? If the supplier had the capability to bring it all the way, why are we doing a tender splitting?
It's too expensive at the moment. We want to reduce the cost. It's expensive if you deliver it in Vereeniging and transport it by road.
So your
it's
supplier
expensive. We want to reduce
it to Vereeniging?
Yes.
Right. So is their contract expired?
No.
Their contract has not expired?
It has not expired.
Right. Now, how long is this new process going to take? Does it coincide with the expiration of this current contract?
Let me put it this way. We have got a 10-year contract for the supply of limestone from Idwala in the Northern Cape to Kusile. When we went into that contract, it was a supply and deliver. At the point that we realized that the transportation would be too expensive, what we say to the supplier, we will give you a time for you to do the delivery. So they've got a contract with Transnet to rail it to Vereeniging, and they've got transporters who take it from Vereeniging to Kusile by road. So that leg is very expensive. So we said, we're giving you 2 years of the transportation part. The supply of limestone is there so that we seek a solution that optimizes costs and reduces that cost. So that's where this siding requirement came in. So even from the initial stage where we contracted for limestone itself, we said you are supplying limestone to Kusile, but only for the 2 years is where you are going to be doing the logistics part, because we need it to be optimized, because the current costs are too high. So in these 2 years, we needed to seek a solution, and the initial thinking, like I said, was Transnet is supposed to do an end-to-end solution, which will be rail from the dispatch point right through to the end. So this service is new. This service is new. There is no, it doesn't exist at the moment. So there is no existing contract for siding operation at the moment.
So how is it getting there?
It's being delivered at Vereeniging.
By who?
By the supplier.
On what basis? A contract?
On the basis of a contract.
Then how do you say it doesn't exist?
I'm saying the change, this new change doesn't exist because we are changing it to try and optimize.
But you can't change in a vacuum. You have to change on the basis of something that was there. I would imagine it's a contract. You've come to a realization that it's expensive. So the maintenance of this contract is expensive. Cost reduction, all of us here support it. That's
yes.
Fine. That's good. So does this seek to alter a contract? Because unless the supplier is very nice, they said, no, I'll supply, and out of the cool of my heart, I will deliver.
It was structured as such. We said, for the first 2 years, you will be doing the transportation, Mr. Supplier. But after the 2 years, we need to have found a better solution to reduce the cost. So this solution that we are seeking, we have the 24 months that we gave ourselves, at which point we have tried the treasury route, where they have said, go on tender. We have gone out on tender for the service. We have actually shortlisted. We are about to obviously...
So it was contract-based?
Yes.
For 2 years. So supply for 10, deliver for 2.
On a supply and delivery for the first 2 years. You supply the limestone and deliver it. So that after the 2 years, Eskom and Transnet come up with a less expensive solution.
Right.
We are cognizant that the current arrangement is expensive.
Right. So that's the point I'm trying to make, that there was a contract, and it speaks to contract management. There's 2 years upon which this supply and delivery is going to take place. Whilst that happens,
yes.
A process must be underway,
yes.
To find a cheaper way to do. So there's a contract. So we can't say it's new. Not a new activity. So the question then becomes, has the 2 years expired?
When the 2 years expire, we should have secured this new contract. It
has
not expired yet.
Right. So you began the process of the supply, the delivery aspect within the 2 years?
Yes, yes.
Right. And it is at that point when you did not see the need to go to the market, when you had 2 years and you sought a deviation and you did so on the basis of Transnet study and advice?
Because, you see, ma'am, that's where the problem is. When due process is seen as an irritation, once it starts there, then the slide comes in where you might, in this particular instance, have sought to do a genuine thing, but it opens the doors for all other wrong things to then sneak in. You see? That's why we don't like irregular expenditure. Somebody will say irregular expenditure means you did not follow the rules, but the goods were delivered. That's good and fine. But somewhere down the line, then wrong things start to happen. I think that's the point is driving home. Because I think there was a study by the National Treasury Auditor General that in instances where officials have the right to take decisions on procurement, they rather take personal decisions than follow procurement processes. Oh, yeah. Well.
And I think the point has been made, and I hope it's been found. The point I'm trying to make, Chair, is that I do not see why there was a need to seek for a deviation, particularly when we are 2 years in order to do this. I don't. I find it, in fact, to have been an abuse of process, an easy way out. If process here tenders really going to there's a phrase for biblical scholars, they call it the Via Dolorosa, the long route that Jesus took to Golgotha. Say, no, let's not take the Via Dolorosa. Copy it to Zanis Shishi's fig. And the tender process is seen as a Via Dolorosa. It takes too long. Chair, I want to just go into another and then I'm done. I want to, I really don't want to take up time. I want to, but I see, Chair, there's a hand behind the CEO which
yes, sir.
Keeps, and I want to.
Yeah, Chair. Thank you. Maybe it will help to give this information. If you look at the where Gusile is located, right now there's three sidings that are surrounding the area. And that was a piece of study that was done at the beginning of the construction of Gusile. That siding is the one in Pretoria, which is plus minus 100 kilometers from Pretoria to Gusile. The other one is in Delmas, which is plus minus 60 kilometers between Gusile and Delmas. And then the other one is this one that is in discussion right now, which is plus minus 30 kilometers from that Highveld Tlua area to Gusile. Now, at the time when that particular analysis was done, when we were starting Gusile, Highveld was still in operation, Highveld Steel and Vanadium. So they were using that rail to rail their stone that they are using. And then at that time, it was not available because it was in full use by the Highveld. And then the other information, Chair, that I want to share is that there is a process of building our own rail that will join the rail between Pretoria and Witbank that will take limestone straight to Witbank. So by virtue of these three sidings that are surrounding Gusile, the one that is nearest is the Highveld Tlua, the one that is in discussion as we speak. I thought, Chair, I should just share that information because I thought it's very important.
No, that's fine. I think we have no issue with the cost reduction. The issue is due process. I think that is what must be underlined and understood. Due process. Do it the right way. You see, because if you don't, you're then opening the door for all sorts of things. This time it's Transnet. It's fine. That's an SOE. We don't mind. It's government. Next time, it's Gekan Incorporated. No, that's fine. It's finishing. I'll give you the opportunity to talk. But what I'm saying is that our interest is due process. Because if you don't follow due process, then that's where the problem is. And due process must never be seen as an irritation. Because once we do that, then we're opening the route for all manner of other problems. That's our main concern. That is the point that we're making. Shengwa?
I'm going to... So, hashtag 40, Generator Services Workshop, 8.3 million rand. While supported by Treasury, there was delays in the design phase. Who caused these delays? Or maybe rather put it this way, what was the nature of these delays and how did they arise?
Can we get a response, please? We need to be better organized than this. We're talking to information that you supply to us.
deviations, detailed notes, second page, right at the top, number 40, delays in design phase. The question is, who caused the delay? Why was there a delay?
Chair, I see some of my colleagues have the details. If you give us a moment, please.
Chair, it's 15 deviations. I would imagine that really these kind of things should be at our fingertips. Please. Because the thing is, we're still going through expansions, and they are far more complex and more nuanced than these deviations. Just want to underscore what the chair is saying, please. So you approach Treasury for a deviation because there was delays. I'm sure you are able to speak to the reasoning. Treasury, get a deviation because let's speak to the merits and demerits of that delay.
Good morning, Chair and the members. Chair, this was a single source request to complete the work that had already started, and there is a scope creep when you look at point number 3, where stage 5 to 6, which included contract administration and the project closed out, that's where the problem lied.
What was the duration of this particular contract?
Should just check the date. So the documents that we have in front of us has got the values. We are trying to figure out the correct date when the contract started.
Well, I hope, CEO, you will appreciate that the reason we want information beforehand is to be able to read it ourselves. So when you come here, it is not to tell us what is in the document, but it is explained.
So the actual construction period was for 28 months, which started from 2017. It has not arrived.
Chair, can I request a quick break so that we can get our acts together?
All right. Let's have a 2 minutes break and you order your documents, especially in terms of detail, because what we want here is details. We don't want broad and floating statements. We want details, because that's what gives us sense, without which nothing makes sense.
Slam, what to start? In your hands.
Thank you very much, Chair. I hope we have. I hope the break was sufficient. So, Chair, we. I was looking at. The issue of the delays, and I was still there, and of course, single source. Scope creep, and then the contract was 28 months. So, unless there's new information that surfaces, and this deviation cost now in the region of about 8.3 million rand. Right. So I think we have dispensed with that particular one.
The initial question you asked about what caused the delay, or who caused the delay. Had not been answered.
Thank you, Chair. I'll ask my colleague Peter to just give you an overview of what transpired in that case. Thank you.
Chair, I think to address the whole transaction, this was a transaction with a consulting engineering firm. They were due to do the design for work on the generator services workshop. They duly did that, but in the design portion, delays were caused by unforeseen site conditions. So in the initial...
Wait, unforeseen what?
Unforeseen site conditions. This is most likely related to the groundworks, because we're talking here about buildings. So in this particular environment, the unforeseen site conditions usually refer to ground conditions that is different than what your initial geological studies have shown. And hence, there was a 2-month delay caused by this unforeseen ground conditions. But further to this, there was also a need to extend to get the initial design engineers back into the contract or back into the project to make sure that there's oversight of the construction activities. So the initial contract was for 11.5 months, and they were needed to brought back for an additional 16 and a half months to make sure that they also provide oversight of the construction during that phase, and that caused the modification amount. And of that 16 and a half months, 2 months of that was caused as a delay due to the unforeseen site conditions that relate to the ground conditions upon which these buildings were built.
What is this? Yeah, let's go back to this unforeseen site condition. Can you go back to that and explain what you say it is?
Chair, unforeseen site conditions is usually where you've done geological surveys on a civil type of contract in the beginning of the work. So you drill a couple of test holes, and in the couple of test holes, you assume then and you are modeling then what the ground conditions will be. Once you start opening up the ground for laying foundations of the building, then the ground has got different conditions than those coming from the test holes that you drill. You cannot sample the whole site, and therefore you need to then do redesigns on your foundation to make sure that your building is stable. It is also usually in construction of residential and commercial property a portion of the challenges that is unforeseen when you start a project of
so
this nature.
If you have these unforeseen site conditions, I thought that would have So that has financial implications and not time implication in terms of delaying your processes, so you need more time. It has financial implications. Why? How? Can you explain that?
In many cases, it may have financial implications as well, because the amount of concrete and the amount of material you need to use in terms of the foundations may need to be more than what you initially estimated.
But
I think what is important in this...
that's fine. But then if that is the case, why should the reason be called delays? Because delays will talk to time. Why don't you say changes in site conditions, which then necessitate maybe a particular level or depth of the foundation or a particular type of material other than the normal one, which will then necessitate additional costs. But if you say delays, it's a time factor.
So I think the delays portion that is the time factor here is because we're talking about the contract with the design engineers that provide oversight. So your argument is absolutely valid if it was with the construction contract, where then there's more costs related to time and material in the construction environment. In this particular case, what has happened is that you got your design engineers back to do oversight on it, and they still need to be part and parcel of this oversight, although there was delays. So for the design engineers to, if I call it almost to hang around while the construction happened, there is time costs associated with them being present. However, construction was delayed for 2 months in that particular environment.
Okay.
Yeah, just on that. So ordinarily, these guys should have been there to begin with, to hang around, as you put it.
The initial.
I don't say that to demean the process. I understand what you mean, but just the nuance. Okay, so they must be there to hang around. Is that the operating procedure?
It depends on project by project. So in this particular case, they were only brought in to be the designers of the particular project, and it was not part of their scope initially to do construction oversight. So it was believed that the team could have done construction oversight themselves. It was then later decided that the construction oversight is needed as well,
okay.
But then construction oversight can only be done by the design engineers, otherwise you lose your professional indemnity and your professional requirements in that particular environment. And hence it was a request for a sole source to the initial design engineers.
Okay. Can we break that 8.3 million rand down, the cost centers of it? What did it entail? Who's who and what's what in the zoo of that 8.3 million?
I unfortunately don't have the detail of the breakdown of the 8.3 million, so we can provide that back to the committee.
See, what I'm trying to do is I'm just trying to aggregate to what extent is the cited reason as a cost factor in this 8.3, because it's being cited as in the main the only reason. So that's why I wanted to break that 8.3 million rands down, because I would imagine that if one was to appear before SCOPA to explain a deviation, you break it down and arrive at a total. So I'm surprised that information is not here.
So, Chair, will be guided by you in terms of whether you accede to that particular request, but I just find it to be sketchy.
No, let us proceed.
Okay.
CEO, on the proviso that you have noted it down, let's get the breakdown of that 8.3 million.
Right.
I have a different view. I think the manner and the way we have presented this is not suitable for a discussion with the members. And that now we are clear as to what the members want, we'll request another time in which we'll be able to present in line with what the committee wants. Because each item takes just too long when we're running around trying to find the story. And I think that on the cost of money per hour, it will cost this committee a lot. We'll be moving too slow, too fast. If we'd be given a space to go back and review how this has been presented, a number of examples have been made, there might be a need for us to call other players that are directly involved in this project. I think we can benefit quite a great deal than how it's happening now.
Ordinarily, I would agree with the CEO, but I would want to put it to Bongani that this is a necessary exercise for yourselves and for this committee, because precisely our job is to do exactly what we are doing. Because what I'm trying to get at is, excuse me, is the bottom line. Anybody, whether it's ESCOM or any other institution of state, is going to apply for a deviation, must have the information for justification at their fingertips. Because it speaks to fully understanding the gravity of what a deviation is. We will not accept a situation where a deviation, as I've said previously, and probably this is a broken record, is a norm, excuse me, as opposed to being an exception. So I would like us to go through these motions, not for the sake of going through them, but because it is to the collective interest of you going back and understanding of what is expected. Secondly, there's cost involved in you flying back down here again, which must be borne by the taxpayer, and you are already dealing with a lot of things, and we can't keep you here till the end of time. If what you submit, Chair, is not satisfactory, then sure enough, we'll have a basis to call you back. But Chair, I don't think it. We must throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think let us continue. Let us continue, Chairperson, because to send people back is not an easy thing. So let's continue. If we run into a wall and there's no way out, then we'll at that point considering the fact, of course, that we also don't have time. There's other entities and departments who still need to appear. We've got full-scale night meetings even next week to make full time. So maybe, Chair, let's continue.
That's why I was suggesting that those details, you can send them to us. We'll look at them. And if there are things that are untoward, then we still request for further engagement. Yeah.
I'd also be interested to know who did the test, the sampling of the site, and how much did they cost us? Because this deviation arises because the test revealed something else and the practical implementation revealed something else. So interested to know who that is and how much they also cost us. Right, Chair, hashtag 44, 8.4 million rand. Contractor could not complete the remaining work as the resistors for three sites were delivered in February 2017. So maybe if we can just get a very brief explanation as to probably more broader explanation than that, and then I'll follow up on that particular one. The pre-strengthening phase of 3C type filter shunt capacitor banks, 8.4 million rand. To simplify it, why were the resistors not delivered on time?
Why were the resistors not delivered on time? Why were they delivered in February 2017?
Or when were they supposed to have been delivered? You can ask that in... Can we not have a situation
I'm inclined to now agree with the CEO. Because I don't think, you see, like I was saying, CEO, the issue is not to get this information that is here. The information that is here is merely a starting point for us to then engage. I'm sure there are four or five questions just on this part alone. So if you don't have the level of details around this, then we're not going to have a discussion.
Chair, because they're a whole leg, you see, Chair. I'm trying to put this as diplomatically as possible. Chair, you know what my difficulty is? They asked for a break. You said 2 minutes and we lingered around far more than 2 minutes. This was to get ducks in a row. That's what gets to me. I find it to be highly, highly disappointing in the most extreme of terms. And to put it bluntly, this particular exercise probably ranks amongst the worst demonstrations of preparedness we have seen in the 4 years of the life of this committee. Ill-preparedness par excellence. Because what I'm sensing is that at every transaction, we're going to have delays in having the information. What I'm trying to say, Chair, if I'm going to apply for a deviation, I must be able to explain it from every material aspect. From the breakdown of costs to the narratives of why the reason we have advanced happened in its full context within the parameters and ambits of the law and everything there, I'm not sure this is the kind of preparedness we would expect from such a high level of leadership and management of one of this SOE. So, Chair, fair enough. We can suspend today, but I think it must be within the context of understanding what this is a huge disappointment. Because the other thing I just want to do is, before, Chair, you make a ruling, which I would like responded to before we, if we go, of what Treasury did not approve, which of those did you continue with, albeit the non-approval? Not well, Treasury can go and jump siyaqhubeka. If there was. Because, Chair, then it becomes ukuqasha, Chair. We will just want to... I can't accept it in good faith, Chair. I'm struggling. I'm really, really badly.
It's okay. I hear you. I think they said that there were three. Unless if you were asking for them to indicate the specific ones that were rejected by Treasury, but they nonetheless, I think...
They did say it was three. Would like to zoom into those three, because...
Why? No, I'm thinking, you know, if we're going to suspend engagement, let's leave it here. Because when they come back, we'll still have a fuller discussion. Otherwise, they'll tell you these are the three, and you say, but why? Who did what? And then you hit a brick wall. So I would say, let's leave it here. Give them time to go and prepare, and then maybe if we could agree on a date, you know, like we did with Public Works yesterday, we were able to give them a date yesterday to come back. But they must appreciate it will be in the evening, and please no load shedding, so that the sitting can sit. Yes, comrade.
Yes, Chairperson, thanks for the opportunity. And I agree with what both of you are suggesting. I hope it was not a directive. It's a suggestion that we have to talk about as members of the committee. A message has to be sent out clear. And it's not the first time that ESCOM is coming before SCOP. So they should be understanding the way we are operating at SCOP. It's not allowed, you know. You can't come to a meeting of Parliament with documents that you don't know the content of, that you're not even sure if you are coming or going. Our public entities, Chairperson, are in problems. And you can see what is the cause of the problems. ESCOM, like you said before, has been in the media for wrong reasons, Chairperson. So I agree. I'm not saying we should pursue it. I want to suggest that we said we are going to meet with Public Works on Thursday. Wednesday, let's meet ESCOM on Tuesday, but with a clear message of actually saying, go and do your job. For instance, Chairperson, as they were giving answers, I was looking at all the suppliers that are sold, sulfur liquid suppliers in the internet. It doesn't take 2 minutes for you to check that. The suppliers of the boiler suppliers, those sole suppliers, you get them here, they're more than 15 or 10, and they are sole suppliers. The limestone suppliers, that's the only limestone supplier in South Africa. You look at internet, I was going through it, and I even showed Comrade Kekan. It's not right, Chairperson. We know that this is... we are going to repeat it and repeat it until they understand that we do not want you to make favors. We want to see transformation within government's departments. You are stifling it. Why are you doing that in the name of trying to redirect democracy and actually frustrate transformation that you are talking about? There's no way that Transnet can make Sporo, Sporo ke Sporo, sesenzwe ke government with public money. And they say, only Thabiseng, Saiki, and Ross can get in here because they pay.
They're taking you at ransom. You know, you are part of playing around with our people. You are blocking everybody to come on board, especially blacks, and keep on putting, you know, other people before everything else. This thing of transporting what from Nabarking, limestone, from Northern Cape to Kusile. There are limestone suppliers within the department. It's here, a CEO, doesn't take 2 minutes to check that. So it doesn't make sense what you are saying, guys. Please, let us not stifle transformation. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong that we have done. We want to see, we want you to push this country forward. It is not right. So next week when you come back with the facts. Yes, if you have made a mistake, you have made a mistake. There's nothing wrong. Come, because, you know, these documents are now public documents. People can see. We are giving you a chance to actually say to them, we are correcting the situation. But if you are not honest, you will never correct the situation. There are obviously people within ESCOM that doesn't want these things to happen. And if you don't put your foot down, they're never going to listen to you. Put your foot down so that you can see exactly who is trying to sabotage the whole process. Because we don't want our public enterprises being privatized. That's why I'm talking from the heart now. And actually saying to you, if you don't put your foot down, we are going to have this again Tuesday, or even if we call you on Monday, we're still going to have the same thing. Because there are people who are making sure that they will frustrate, they will give tenders to the ones that they want to give to, and nobody else is going to get the tender. Because some people are supposed to be getting this. We're told about those mines that you would give money to for the capital. You are getting this tender, you're helping this person for 2 years. Why can't you do, I mean, you'll find that the person that you are helping, it's the prepayments. You'll find that the somebody that you are helping, it's somebody who does not need that. You know, if it was Ntabiseng's company being black, starting this thing, and you are saying, I'm helping, so that they can be able to supply Eskom, it would be something else. It's only 6% of black miners in South Africa. It is not right. The demographics of the country are not talking to that. Please, just smell the coffee. This is not time. We are 24 years in governance. This, or am I exaggerating it? Even if I'm doing that, it's okay. But we've been here for long. We cannot be talking this transformation. It should be part of the business. It should be part of the game, not something that we have to drill and make you understand it. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Comrade Kuno is suggesting that we meet them Tuesday evening. Ross?
Thanks, Chair. I hope I don't have a different view again. It seems it's becoming my culture of differing with the committee since yesterday.
No, it's okay.
Chairperson, you know, if you look at the broader presentation that was requested, I think the percentage in terms of deviations and extensions is very low, percentage of 1 or 2% of the total contracts. That puts it in a better perspective, but the problem is here in terms of the numeric value of those contracts. It's very huge amounts, and Eskom deals with massive amounts in terms, and so the implications in terms of possible corruption and possible manipulating of outcomes is severe. It needs to be stopped, and that's why the committee, rightly so, goes into the details of all those contracts. Now, let me just give you an example. I won't be too long. The lime contract. I think the Honourable Kuno is quite right. In terms of the areas, I've also Googled it. There's a lot of limestone available in there. In the northern regions of the country. It doesn't have to come specifically from the Northern Cape. If it should come from the Northern Cape, we would like to know in terms of the cost implications. Was it very cheaper, and then was the transport cost also inculcated? So that's a case to be made out, and I think Treasury can advise us. And now I'm coming to the role of Treasury in this regard. Also with regards to outsourcing to a state department with Transnet. Your contract was with Transnet, as indicated by your energy spokesperson. Now, my information is that the outsourcing, you've made the contract with Transnet, but in terms of the Transnet contract, it's been outsourced to privatized owners. So that is an important issue that was omitted in your presentation. You've engaged with Transnet, but I believe that the Transnet has outsourced it to private companies to deliver that limestone from the Northern Cape. So we have to have an in-depth look at this contract. Now, this is very crucial, and that's why I won't exclude another personal interaction with this committee. But, Chairperson, it is a very low percentage, and we have National Treasury at our disposal. I'm trying to look at whether whether we should not first, as a committee, engage with National Treasury on these issues in depth before we see the committee, and then engage thoroughly whether there should be accountability in some of these issues. Because we're talking about the serious intervention, as Honourable Slenga said, from Treasury to say no, but then on certain contracts, and then the intervention to say, yes, we will proceed, and proceeding then in terms of contracts with other state departments, which is actually outsourced. So that's an important deviation in terms of that. So there must be accountability, but I would like to just put a rider to say, yes, they might come again and present to us, Chair, but I think as a committee, perhaps the possibility of engaging with National Treasury, because they have all the details why they said no in terms of these deviation extensions. If we can have a written submission first from National Treasury with regards to our concerns of all these contracts, and then determine whether we would like to see this committee again, or whether we will opt for direct consequences in terms of this. This is just a broader perspective that I have, and I hope I didn't differ with the committee too fundamentally this time. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. I agree with the postponement to Tuesday. Fortunately, I had that view when I came here, because I could see the ill-preparedness in ESCOM. But the thing is, the colleagues from ESCOM should understand one important thing. One, this has a direct implication on you as individuals and ESCOM as an organization. Because you can't have senior managers of ESCOM come into a meeting ill-prepared as you were. Hence, whilst you were caucusing, we were joking here, that you pretend as if some of you met in the plane coming here. You didn't even know that you are coming here. And that's the picture that you gave us. And unfortunately, this is on record, because you're in Parliament. Please take Parliament serious. And we know some of the officials, when they come here, they think that they are flying to Cape Town for a holiday. You might find that we are saying, let's adjourn this meeting. But some of you are leaving tomorrow. You see, you'll be going back to the hotels. And who is paying that? You see? But we are appealing to you. Please. Take Parliament serious. Gone are the days where you thought that, no, that is, parliamentarians will just come to a meeting and listen to the presentation and out they leave. Because that was the impression, and hence you wanted to make a presentation to us to make us understand. We are not operating that way as COPPA. We would request you to give us information. We would do research on the information that we are providing. And we are ready for you. You see, it's so embarrassing that we are saying we are ready, you are not ready. And you submitted us with documents. You cannot even talk to your own document. It's really embarrassing. Shame on you. I'm saying that.
All right.
And I'm not going to withdraw that one.
Okay. All right.
Please, when you come back here, you must know that you are representing ESCOM. And South Africans are looking at you to take them out of this mess. As my colleague has indicated, ESCOM has been in the news for wrong reasons. Some of us were excited that, oh, there's new dawn in ESCOM. But, hey, Agunzima
Bafetu. All right.
Please, let's correct this.
Okay. All right. Slengwa?
No, Chairperson, I would like to second the proposal for a meeting for Tuesday in the evening, because I think it is in the collective interest of trying to get things right. Chair, I would like to request that, because ESCOM is coming back next week, that we be supplied with information insofar as Tegeta is concerned, where expansions and deviations on any contract touching on Tegeta was involved. I will, and officials involved in that, I will brief the chair as to the reasons why I make that request. I thought we were going to talk about it before we left, but under the circumstances of what was a new sunset, but has become a new dawn, which has become a new sunset as we now leave this meeting. Chair, and then I want to put on the table, see, because for us, there's no wasteful expenditure. We are here, Vele, even this afternoon, tomorrow, so on, so Vele, now we are grounded here. As Honorable Gugan is saying, when these parliamentary appearances become junkets, we need to find a stronger way to circumvent that kind of mentality. So, CEO, on the basis of your proposal for this postponement, your suggestion rather, and want to say, if next week Tuesday we find that the responses and the information provided is not sufficient and borders on the ill-preparedness of today, that every single member of the delegation of ESCOM will reimburse ESCOM for their flights to Cape Town and the accommodation that they'll be provided, and S&T, as a commitment to get things right. Let's put our money where our mouth is. The taxpayer cannot be expected to continue paying at leisure when circumstances are so tough. So I'm putting that on the table as a commitment. If we find ourselves in a mess such as the mess of today, every member of the delegation will reimburse. So I would like to hear the reaction of the board and the managed leadership here to that suggestion. Because, Chair, we need to walk our talk. What has happened today should never, ever happen again. And the fact that it has inspires no confidence at all.
All right. Okay. No. Thanks very much. I think there were two suggestions. I want to talk to them. Firstly, the suggestions from Ross about National Treasure. I think as we always interact with National Treasury, Comrade Kekane and Lemwa, but any one of us, we can engage the gentleman from National Treasury on particular or specific areas that we may want. But I may want to add maybe let's have a short discussion when we finish in terms of what your input could be in terms of your understanding of your interaction with ESCOM around these matters. Because comrades must recall that the National Treasury made a presentation to us about the deviations, which ranked ESCOM number one amongst the many. And so we had hearings with all of these other people, from SARS to everybody. It's just that we had to postpone meeting with ESCOM at that time. So National Treasury did engage us. It can just be a question of, you know, touching base here and there. Yeah, I'm saying let's engage them beyond here in terms of what Ross is suggesting to just pick. Secondly, Hlengwa, your suggestion, I'm not shooting it down, but you know, I've confidence in Mr. Khatib. And let's go and prepare and come on Tuesday. I'm not erasing what Lengwa said. Keep it at the back of your mind. And take it more as a concern. Yeah, than anything. Let's not miss the actual point what it's trying to say. And then look at the Tegeta issue. Were there any expansions or deviations in relation to the Tegeta contract? And then can we have that information before you come, please? Because we want to have information so that we can go and, as Comrade Kekana say, study. You see the presentation that you have. I've scribbled all over it because I was reading and making points and saying, no, but this is a contradiction. I'm looking at page 4, yeah, bullet point 1, 2, 3, bullet point 3 and bullet point 4, just a contradiction. Yeah.
Just to say, you know, before we would get who was part of that, a name to it and what happened. Because like everybody, they did what they were not supposed to do, the actions that you took. So if it can be part of what you are saying. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, we used to do that with irregular expenditure. Not necessarily deviations, but I hear what you're saying. In terms of the notes, if we can make them more comprehensive, Khatib, your detailed notes, we see there's a project description, deviation value, why, and status. If we can just add, it is always useful to us to have the name of the company that was involved, the original value of the contract, and how many times have deviations been done on this contract that involves this company. Because, you know what, Transnet, we found that Protea Coin Security Company had its tender extended 13 times without going on tender. Yeah, no. I'm just saying, just to say, it talks to our concerns. You know the old Terrorism Act. You are guilty until you prove yourself innocent. So that's how we approach our engagement with you. There's something wrong you have done. Prove to us that there's nothing wrong. So can we add that additional information? We want to know which are the companies, because there are areas here where I've asked name of the company and a whole host of others. So if we can add the name of the companies, the value of the original contract vis-a-vis the deviation or the expansion, and the number of times that that contract has been expanded or deviations has been sought for that particular contract, then we'll be able to have a detailed engagement. Did I see your hand up, ma'am? Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And when we had a break, I also consulted with the chairperson of the board, and I also expressed my deep embarrassment of what has happened today. And one of the things that we probably have to look at as a board is to be able to exercise more oversight
on some of the issues that get provided here. So on that note, we'd like to profusely apologize for today's engagement.
All right. And just take note, actually, the accounting authority is the board. So when you're here, it is you who should be answering questions, and not Hatebe or the gentlemen and ladies sitting there at the back. So they can't be bringing issues that you as a board do not know. So the level of touch, it's always a delicate balance between leaning too heavily on management issues and keeping proper oversight so that you are able to account for what happens under your watch. The operative word here is detail. We want details, because without details, we would not know. We would not know without. So here, we want details. And we are not the caricatured MPs who don't read. We read here. We read. So I want details. So, but anyway, it is fine. I'm hoping going forward we'll be able to interact well. We'd like to thank you very much, gentlemen and ladies, for coming. So we sorted out for Tuesday. Tuesday, 6 o'clock in the afternoon. In the evening, Ntombi will send the confirming correspondence just to confirm venue and time. But I can assure you, it's most likely to be here, 6 o'clock. Thank you very much.